This morning on Outdoor Radio, biologists Kent McFarland and Sarah Zahendra stick their heads in a porcupine den.
We are out today in Stratford, Vermont, on a really blustery day.
Yeah, it's midwinter again, and that's kind of lucky for us, because today we need it to be cold and blustery.
We do, but I'm honestly not sure it's the greatest day to be in the woods with all this wind. But here we are, on the search for a really interesting animal.
Because we're after porcupines. We're going to go to one of their den sites, and this nasty weather, we're hoping, has them in their den so we can see how cozy they are.
Exactly, and we are joined today by our very own Steve Fascio, a co-worker of ours at the Vermont Center for Eco Studies. And he's known about this den for a long time. And so he's going to show us where it is and talk to us a lot about porcupines. And Kent's going to get in there with the porcupine and see what it's like to get quilled.
Right? Yeah, I might stay away from it this time.
I'm Sarah Zahendra.
And I'm Kent McFarland.
We're biologists with the Vermont Center for Eco Studies.
Welcome to Outdoor Radio. So, Steve, you brought us back about 10, 15 minutes back this old woods road. How'd you find this site where the porcupine is denning?
I ski and walk on this woods road, you know, all the time because it's pretty close to my house. So I noticed this hemlock tree often had little nipped branches that were right on the ground. And then I noticed once we got some snow, I noticed the porcupine's trail.
So what you're saying, Steve, is one of the ways that we can tell that a porcupine is in the area is if you see a lot of nipped branches on the ground around a hemlock tree.
Yeah, and if you look at the end of the branch, like here's one, the way it's nipped at a 45-degree angle, you know, those porcupines are rodents. They just, you know, use those big front teeth and nip the branches off.
So are they like beaver? Their teeth are constantly growing and they have to keep chewing? Pretty much.
So they're eating hemlock trees, but what else do they eat during the wintertime?
They like the tips of the hemlock branches.
So he probably nipped it off to get at the end.
All, oh, yeah. It's all nipped and clean.
Nipped it off and got the ends.
They'll also eat the inner bark of some trees. Red maples they like, and I think sugar maples as well. They'll just climb up a tree, hang onto the trunk, and nibble off the inner bark.
And, you know, people don't realize it, but that porcupines can be destructive in some forest stands, and some foresters to this day don't like them. In fact, in Vermont, until the early 1950s, there was actually a bounty on porcupines.
Aww.
You got 50 cents a snout for them. In the 1950s, they paid out something like $90,000 for porcupine snouts.
Well, when their populations are high, they can do quite a bit of damage.
So and what keeps their populations down? Fishers, you were going to say.
Yeah, fishers were extirpated for a while, you know, in Vermont in the 50s. They were reintroduced, and they're now pretty common and widespread. And they're one of the main predators of porcupines.
And probably coyotes, too, I assume.
Coyotes. Yeah. Bobcats, probably, on occasion.
Just another example of, like, you mess around with the predators, and it's got these effects of too many porcupines, for example.
Exactly.
So you're skiing along here, and you find tracks, and you find this evidence from a porcupine.
Yeah. I mean, I always look for them in these two hemlock trees.
Wait, you said you look for them up in the trees, so you're telling me that these guys are pretty decent climbers, right?
Yeah, they're pretty decent climbers. I don't think they're very coordinated.
Yeah, there was one study, I think, from the Catskills where they looked at a bunch of porcupines and found that 30% of them had healed bone breaks. Yeah. So
they fall out of trees a good bit. They are as awkward as they look.
So you follow the tracks to the den. Can we do that? Can we go check the den out?
Let's go check the den
out.
Want
to do that?
Yeah,
let's
absolutely.
Do it.
Let's go find a porcupine in a den.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a little icy.
Wow, that was hard post-holing here in the snow, that's
for
sure. It
was. I'm a little out of breath.
Me too. We're right alongside a little stream, which is actually flowing from a little melt yesterday. But now most of the porcupine dens I've found are in cracks of rocks and underneath rocks. But this one
He's got plush quarters.
It's underneath a partially upturned tree root, but it's big.
Last time I was here, you know, the snow was built up, and the entrance hole was probably no more than maybe 16 inches in diameter. Now, you know, the whole hole is open.
So Kent's going to crawl in there, right?
Well, let's see what's in there first.
And cuddle with the porcupine.
Let's cross over the stream and see if he's home.
I got a flashlight. I'll take a look.
Let's grab my headlamp out.
Yeah, I want to take a look at him for sure.
Fairly small. I'm guessing it's a fairly young guy.
Now, Steve, he's not really quote-unquote hibernating, right?
No.
He's just resting in there where it's warmer.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of porcupine scat in here, too. That is filled with porcupine scat. Maybe I won't go in there and lay down.
Stick your head in and
We'll pull some scat out.
He's beautiful. Look at that.
Is he awake?
He's not saying. He's got his back to me, which is
Which, you know, for a porcupine, I guess that's pretty wise because their longest quills are on their tail and on their backside.
Yeah, they always try to keep that towards any opening or any predator, right?
Right, and so technically I would be considered a predator, in his mind anyway.
So is it big enough that a human could get in there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we could all of us get in there. But...
Where is he?
He's to the left. Look, all you got to stick your head further in there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, crawl in there, be on the scat.
Because he's got his back to us, those white quills that are on their back, sort of like a stripe, he's got them flared up.
So maybe this is a good time to mention a common myth about porcupines, and that is a lot of people think that they shoot their quills.
No, they don't shoot their quills, but when their quills get impaled in something, right, they come out of the porcupine. The tips of the quills are barbed, right? So they go in to whatever the predator is.
Say Kent.
Yeah, Kent's cheek.
Right.
And then there's this mechanism under their skin that when the quills get hit by something, this sort of strapping that sort of holds the quill in place is released, and then the quill comes out easier after it's been impacted.
It makes it easier for a porcupine to quill something and to detach its quills.
Right.
And when you say that the end of a porcupine quill is barbed, it's not like it's got barbs at 90-degree angles. It's
right.
Actually got something that looks like fish scales.
Yeah, it's not like a fish hook with a barb. And those barbs actually make it easier for the quills to go in as well,
yep.
Which is fascinating, almost like a serrated edge of a knife.
Right.
Actually, in that den, there's a whole bunch of needles laying there. If I insert this under just a little bit of the skin on my hand, which I've just done...
Don't try this
at
home, though.
Yeah. It's really pulling on my skin, and now I'm going to... Okay, that did hurt a little bit.
Yeah, all for the sake of art.
Those scales grip right on there.
They actually have antibiotic properties as well,
right.
Because porcupines will... believe it or not, quill themselves.
Yeah,
on
when
occasion.
They fall out of trees.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe when they're mating.
Yeah, I would imagine they have to be quite careful.
Well, one of the interesting things about them is that they can push their quills up, sort of in a defensive posture, and then they can also lay them flat so that they don't quill their mate.
When the mating season does come, which is usually in the fall, late summer, fall, the females have to somehow attract the males because she has... very short period to mate, 12 hours every year, that's about it.
And so she attracts lots of males from all around, and then they fight. And then one male wins the rights to the female and sort of mate guards her for a while. Their populations are actually doing pretty well, right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think they're pretty well in balance with the predator populations, you know, they're keeping them in check. So the system seems to be functioning pretty well right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key here. We have to have a full-functioning system. We got to have predators. We got the herbivores. They control each other. We have a healthy system going on right now, and that's the key.
Well, and on that positive note, I'm getting really cold. What do you say we go back to Fascio's house and have ourselves some hot chocolate?
Yeah, time for some hot chocolate. Let's go.
I'm Sarah Zahendra.
And I'm Kent McFarland.
Thanks for listening to Outdoor Radio.
You'll find more information and photos at vpr.net. Outdoor Radio is produced in collaboration with the Vermont Center for Eco Studies and is made possible by the Jack and Dorothy Byrne Foundation.